Thank you, Your Honor. If I may, can I reserve about...
Just keep it on. I don't know if there's a clock up there, but you want to reserve 5 minutes?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Richard Maslany. I represent Joseph Abruzco. Joseph suffered serious permanent injuries when he was crushed between the bars in a dock piling in August 2003 in Naknek, Alaska. He's appealing summary dismissal of his negligence and negligence per se claims against the vessel owners of the barge, the Baranof Trader. At the time of the accident, Joseph was working in a narrow 18-inch portal. On one side were the shipping containers, which was lashing down. On the other side was the safety railing, tied with two safety wires. Joseph was kneeling down properly to lash a turnbuckle into a pad eye in the deck bar. He lost his balance, fell against the safety wire, fell over a loose lower safety wire and underneath the upper safety wire. As he was falling down, he was able to grab hold of the loose lower safety wire, but when the barge subsequently moved back against the dock, he was crushed between the barge and the dock piling, again resulting in serious permanent injuries. Now, had the safety railing contained three courses of railings, which is required by Coast Guard regulations, he would not have fallen over the side of the barge. Moreover, had the lower wire been taut instead of loose, he also would not have fallen over the side of the barge. Now, the defendants conducted an accident investigation after this incident, and the defendants concluded that the lower safety wire was, quote, inadequate and improperly secured, end quote, and so loose that it, quote, did not provide an effective barrier, end quote. The defendants further found that Joseph, quote, was able to fall through the safety lines due to the lower line being slack, end quote, and that the loose safety wire was, quote, a major contributing factor, end quote, to the accident. Now, Joseph brought two claims against the vessel owners. He brought a negligence claim and a negligence per se claim. And the district court granted the defendant summary judgment on both, and we are appealing both.
Let me ask you about the per se claim, which, frankly, I guess is the weaker of your claims. Wasn't there really an exemption from the Coast Guard when they inspected it and said it was okay?
There was a certificate of inspection issued for the Baranof Trader, but there is no evidence that there was any indication that there was a specific determination made that the exemption language in the Coast Guard Regulation 46 CFR 92.25-5 was made.
Well, how precise do you have to be?
Well, more importantly, the exemption applied, there wasn't a reasonable conclusion because it certainly was not unreasonable and impractical to have a third railing on the Baranof Trader.
Well, but then you're arguing that the rules say the Coast Guard rule applies unless it's exempted. The exemption is there. You may disagree with it, but that's you no longer have negligence per se.
Well, actually, the exemption doesn't say the Coast Guard can choose at its discretion whether or not the third railing should be there. The exemption has a very specific requirement. It requires the Coast Guard to determine that the installation of rails of such height will be unreasonable and impractical in regard for the business of the vessel. And in this case, all the evidence was that it was not unreasonable. It was not.
Well, there's no evidence that there's no report from the there's no assessment from the Coast Guard other than the inspection report. Is that correct?
That's right. And so even if there was a specific determination made or whether or not there was just a general one, and in this case, there's the Marine Safety Manual, which was the internal agency document generated by the Coast Guard that provided a categorical exemption for all freight barges everywhere,
well, I think
under what situations from this regulation.
The problem you run into is that the defendants can logically rely on the Coast Guard, so your suit would be against the Coast Guard, which it isn't.
Well, that is an issue that has not been raised in the district court and is not raised in the briefing. Is the only issue raised before the district court was whether or not did the Baranof Trader violate the regulation.
Precisely.
They made a defense to that, but they had not been raised, that has not been briefed, that has not been argued.
Precisely, because they can rely on what the Coast Guard said. You want them not to be able to rely on what the Coast Guard said.
Well, I think that the evidence shows that the Baranof Trader violated the regulation. And then maybe perhaps the argument says, well, we didn't know about it as industry standard. But, of course, in Martinez, this court, the Ninth Circuit, said that industry standard is not a defense to negligence under 905B simply because an accident hasn't happened before or that a certain way things are done is the industry standard. It's not a defense to negligence. I don't think it's a defense to negligence per se either. And the Coast Guard regulation is clear on its face. There should be three wires. There were three wires. The Baranof Trader violated the regulation. And I think that what happened in this case is that both the defense and the district court below spent a lot of time trying to basically rewrite the regulation to say that, well, two wires are okay so long as two wires are reasonable. But, of course, the abstract question of whether or not three railings or two railings should be required, generally, has already been answered by the regulation. Three railings are required unless it's unreasonable and impractical to have the third wire railing. And in this case, it was indisputable, not unreasonable or impractical to have that third wire railing. They did not interfere with cargo operations, it would provide additional safety, and it was relatively easy to install. And while an agency's interpretation of its regulations is due deference, where an agency manual or interpretation conflicts with the plain terms of a regulation, it is no force of effect. And there is no possible way to conform the blanket exemption in the Marine Safety Manual, which is the most likely reason why the certificate of inspection was issued, because of the Marine Safety Manual. There's no way to rectify or to have the Marine Safety Manual work with the express language of 46 CFR 92.25-5. And in regards to the negligence per se claim, I'd also note that in the, for example, it is a defense to negligence per se claim that a regulation or a law is so obscure or inapplicable that it wouldn't be reasonable to hold that as a standard of care. But again, that's a decision that should be made by the district court in the first instance and not by this court in the first instance. And that's an issue that should be raised below, should be briefed below, and should be addressed. And for example, the restatement...
Is that a question of law?
I believe it is. But I believe that none of the parties have briefed it, and so this court doesn't have the benefit of having the parties' arguments on this issue. Now, we note that the restatement does note that it's in highly unusual cases that laws are not going to be, such as this, or would not apply the standard of care. So I think that if that is going to be an issue, that should be addressed by the district court for the first time, in the first instance.
Now, let me ask you on your negligence per se. I take it by reading it, it's clear that what this particular regulation goes to is protection of all people.
Yes.
But your client had a different standard than all people. Under our law, that I think is still applicable, it's an expert and experienced stevedore working under the reasonable care, which is different from all people. So why would the per se rule apply here?
This argument actually also, this is also an issue raised with the loose lower safety wire, is what is the danger to expert and experienced longshoremen as opposed to just all people in general? And we admit, I mean, there's no doubt that the rule is that danger has to be expert and experienced longshoremen. But in this case, there's been no evidence that Joseph was doing anything improper or that his inexperience contributed in any part of the accident, and this is before even recognized.
Who's, you're saying there's no evidence, so I am, but that isn't the issue. The issue is you have the burden of proof to prove that your client, functioning as an experienced, an expert, act using reasonable care, that that standard was met. There was no expert testimony that was presented by your client on that test. Isn't it your burden to do that?
Well, just the expert testimony just a second, but on the general burden on the expert or experienced to answer directly your first question, in this case, Joseph... Any longshoreman, expert and experienced, will be working in the same manner in the same location as Joseph. And the loose safety wire and the missing third wire is a danger to everybody, expert or inexperienced.
You're making that assumption. You're making an assumption that we don't have in the record. That is, there has not been any evidence that with a loose wire, with not three wires, that there would be an unreasonable risk to an expert and experienced longshoreman acting reasonably.
But the only way you get to that assumption that it wasn't a danger to an expert and experienced longshoreman is if you assume that an expert and experienced longshoreman would never lose his balance, would never have the need to rely on the safety wire.
But you're doing this with a vacuum of evidence. All your client would have had to do was provide us with evidence in the record that, and by an expert and experienced longshoreman, that's all that was necessary. But you're saying there's no evidence, therefore my client wins. I'm not sure you've met your burden of proof. Could you help me with that?
Yes, the evidence is that there was a safety wire.
Yeah?
Expert and experienced longshoreman. There was testimony that Joseph was working in, Joseph was working as an expert and experienced longshoreman would, in the sense that he was kneeling on one knee, he was attaching a turnbuckle.
Where's the record on that? That he was working as an experienced...
No, that what he was doing is what an experienced longshoreman did. Joseph was not an experienced longshoreman, but that the manner in which he was attaching the pad eye or the turnbuckle of the pad eye was appropriate and how long...
Wait a minute. Where was that evidence from an expert?
I mean, that's the testimony of both Luke Dockersloot and of Leo Nagel, and then that's how you do that job. And that's the defense witnesses. But we have... Therefore, we have Joseph doing his job, and then we have a loose safety wire and a missing third rail, and Joseph loses his balance. And the district court specifically recognized there was nothing about Joseph's inexperience that contributed to the accident, and the district court specifically recognized that even experienced longshoremen can lose their balance and stumble, which is a, I mean, I think Mr. Nagel testified to that, but that's such a general proposition. I don't think we need to have someone sit up there and testify, yeah, people lose, can trip on things or lose their balance on the barge, both Luke Dockersloot and Leo Nagel.
We have a specific barge. There's a difference in how barges are packed. There's a difference in the amount of space between the cargo and the edge. There are all of these factors. You're in generalities. I don't see where we can attach a standard without some evidence, expert evidence, not the generalizations. It seems to me it'd been relatively easy, if what you say is accurate, to call an expert and to make test and to provide testimony. It isn't that it's impossible, it's it wasn't done. And I'm just wondering whether or not your burden has been met.
I think in this case, expert testimony is not necessary to meet our burden of proof. Now, I mean, there's clearly should be no expert testimony that says a safety wire needs to be taut instead of slack. Even the defendants admit, the defendant's own expert admits, that safety wires should be taut instead of slack.
Okay, this we said in one of our cases, this implies that certain dangers that may be hazardous to unskilled persons need not be remedied if an expert and experienced stevedore could safely work around them.
Right, and there's been no testimony, or there, I should say that.
That's it.
Wait, I don't think it's logical to conclude that the lack of a safety wire or a loose safety wire is not a danger to an expert and experienced longshoreman, but is to an inexperienced one, because the only way you can get to that assumption or to get to that conclusion is to assume an expert and experienced longshoreman is never going to need safety equipment because he's expert and experienced.
That isn't the point at all. That isn't the point at all. The point is this particular accident, what would an experienced longshoreman, skilled in the longshoreman, have done acting reasonably? And we don't know that.
We do. Both Dr. Stewart and Leo Nagel testified that the way Joseph was attaching the pad eye was appropriate. The only accident that happened here was that both Joseph lost his balance. So unless the rule is we had to have someone testify, well, an expert in experienced longshoreman can lose his balance. And that's going to be the standard of standard, because that's such a basic assumption or such a basic fact that's within the jury's...
Isn't there a why question, why the person lost their balance?
Well, I think the testimony here, well, there's no, we don't know why he lost his balance. Joseph doesn't know. And there's no evidence, no one knows why he lost his balance. The assumption is that the barge was moving around, but everyone agreed that no one knows exactly why he lost his balance. And on the expert issue, I would like to point the court to the Salem versus United States Lines Company case. And in that case, which was a negligence case against a vessel, that's not a longshoreman case, but it was asserting a negligence claim. And that's 370 U.S. 31. The issue was whether or not the vessel should have had railings around the radio tower. And the United States Supreme Court said that's not an issue that requires expert testimony by a naval architect. That was an issue that the jury could decide without expert testimony. And in this case, the issue is far simple. The issue isn't whether or not railings should be installed. The issue is whether or not a loose safety wire should have been taut. A loose safety wire that the defendant's own accident report admitted should have been taut, and that because it wasn't taut, it caused Joseph's accident.
Why don't you address, your time is almost up, and I guess most of your remarks also go to your negligence claim.
Right. I mean, they addressed basically both claims. One specific issue I'd address in the short time I have is this claim that, well, the stevedore should have fixed the loose safety wire before the accident. And, of course, it is not a defense to the turnover duty that the stevedore should have remedied the defective safety equipment. And there's actually, this court has recognized in Martinez, 903 F. 2nd 606, where a longshoreman fell to an unguarded ladder opening, that it's a question of fact of whether or not that unguarded opening was a danger, and even though the stevedore could have put up railings. And again, also in Subbing versus Reardon Smith, 682 F. 2nd 779, 9th Circuit 1982, the issue was a loose dead eye on deck that the longshoreman tripped over and was injured.
Well, you've only got a little time. I'd like to ask you one question. Which one of these defendants is liable?
All three are liable, although for different reasons. Northland, Neck vessel leases, Neck barge lines, which the defense admits is the proper, is a defendant under 905B for the negligence claim. And then Neck vessel lease, or Northland vessel leasing, is the proper defendant for the negligence per se claim. And then Northland Services, as the dual capacity defendant, they are both the employer and the vessel owner as a time charter, is also responsible for the negligence claim.
So you have two defendants you would say were liable for negligence?
Yes.
And the one had given up control of the ship to the other. So what was the negligence?
Well, in the negligence claim, the Natick barge lines, they were the indemnity charter, I believe, of the boat, and they were responsible for it. And they were the ones, and in turning over the vessel with the loose safety wire, they breached the turnover.
That was the negligence.
And also Northland Services, which was a time charter, which also supposedly inspected the vessel before starting stevedoring operations as the vessel owner. They were also responsible.
I see.
Okay.
By the way, is Mr. Abresco a stevedore for all purposes?
Well, in the context,
you just referred to the others as the stevedore. Stevedore operations and whatnot.
Correct.
So is Mr. Abresco is considered a stevedore?
At the time of his accident, for what he was doing, he was a stevedore. That was not his normal profession. Mm-hmm. He had been hired that night, but at the time of his accident, he was a stevedore.
Okay. You got about 3 minutes left for a reply.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Please, the court. My name is Jay Bitsa. I represent Northland Services and Northeast Mainland Knack Barge Line in this matter. This case is a 905B City of Turnover Duty case. And this court has recognized the standard of care in that is specific and explicit. The vessel owner needs to use reasonable care to turn over barges free from conditions that pose an unreasonable hazard, expert and experienced longshoremen exercising reasonable care. In that respect, before any other discussion about what Mr. Bruska did, what Northland Services did, a condition on the vessel has to be identified as dangerous to expert and experienced longshoremen or stevedores exercising reasonable care. And that is an abstract concept. I mean, it's not specific to the facts of the case, but it's more specific to the vessel itself. And that's what required expert testimony, or testimony from any witness with some knowledge of longshoring, what longshoremen do, what stevedores would normally do. And those three witnesses in this case who testified as to those problems, that had that knowledge, all testified that the Baranoff trader was safe. Leo Nagel had multiple years of experience in the industry, testified that the Baranoff trader was safe for an expert and experienced longshoreman. Luke Dropper-Sloop, the barge master at the time, testified that he examined the barge prior to commencement of vessel operation, longshoring operations, and had no concerns as to the safety. Bill Emery testified that even after the accident occurred, the vessel was still safe for operations.
Well, how do you deal with the report that the inadequate and improperly secured safety lines was a major contributing cause of the accident?
That establishes causation, but it does not establish the condition was dangerous to an expert and experienced stevedore.
Well, now, wait a minute. This is a major and contributing cause. It doesn't say to an inexperienced person. It just is a major cause.
And because of the lack of that, because it lacks any discussion of whether it's talking about Joseph Abruska as an inexperienced.
Well, why shouldn't that go to a jury? I mean, you could produce your experts, and maybe they will or won't, but common sense will let the jury know whether this was a major contributing cause or not. I don't understand how a judge can decide it.
We're not just arguing the issue of causation at this point.
No, of course, but I think this is a reasonable statement of negligence. Not only causation, but negligence.
But again,
this is improperly and inadequately secure. That's negligence.
And that goes to the reasonable care of the vessel owner. It does not go to whether the condition itself caught was dangerous.
Well, now, who are you blaming as the vessel's owner? The original party or the one that chartered it? Who do you want to put the blame on?
Knack-Knack Barge Line was the vessel owner at that time.
They'd be the defendant.
They would be the defendant.
You'd like to get the other one's services out.
Northland Services is a dual-capacity employer, but its vessel capacity was as a time charter, which is is fairly limited obligations within the vessel, as a vessel owner.
But I'm being very candid with you. That's your problem. You've got your own expert saying this was an inadequately and improperly secured line. Now, in the excerpt, it's not very clear who made that report. Who made it?
It was a Northland Services employee who was a Northland Services employee who had subsequently left the company once the sale had merger.
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. It was a Northland Services employee who had subsequently left the company after a merger with various entities.
He was no longer employed?
He was no longer employed.
At the time he did the report?
At the time he did the report, he was employed by Northland Services. He was employed by Northland Services as, in capacity, I'm not entirely sure if he was working for this time charter or this stevedore inside of the operation, or the imagined stevedore operation. But that's part of the problem with that report, is it's not clear the experience of the employee.
Well, I'm sure you get calls. I mean, he hasn't disappeared from the earth, has he?
I believe he's in Australia.
What?
I believe he's in Australia.
Well, he might be out of recover. But anyway, that's the difficulty that you've got to get over. And I would think you'd have to get over it before a jury.
The problem is that establishes a causation.
You said that three times.
I know.
I guess we understand each other.
And I guess what my point is that would be an unseaworthy standard of care.
Well, all right.
It was specifically excluded within the with the amendments to the Longshore Act. We've got two alleged defects. We talked about the loose wire. There also is the allegation that the third course of wire should have been supplied. Again, the testimony from the vessel or from the longshoreman with knowledge and with experience in the industry all testified that lack of third grab wire was not expected or necessary within the four unmanned deck cargo barges. And it's not all barges everywhere, it's just unmanned deck cargo barges. And they testified the lack of third wire did not render the vessel unsafe. In applying, and there's no testimony no evidence from the plaintiff that the lack of third wire rendered it unsafe. They just relied on the doctrine of negligence per se. Doctrine of negligence per se should not apply because the doctrine requires that the safety statute or regulation be adopted to protect the relevant class of persons. Again, we're talking about expert and experienced longshoremen. There's nothing to suggest that the Coast Guard regulation was adopted specifically to protect those expert and experienced longshoremen.
And counsel, in his argument, says, I do have evidence, and I got that evidence from your experts, as to that standard. What's your response to that?
That's just the fact that Joseph Briscoe was doing what an expert experienced stevedore was doing, would have done, does not prove that the hazard was dangerous to an expert experienced longshoreman. All it means is that in an abstract, he was there. And I think there was...
What was that? What did you say? All it proves is what?
That the accident occurred. It does not prove why it occurred, not suggest why it occurred, or what an expert experienced longshoreman would expect or would know the dangers that a barge would present to an expert experienced longshoreman. And that's evidence that trier of fact needs an understanding of how a longshoreman would look at this barge, what the dangers would be on the barge, and how they would correct those dangers.
Well, if I understand your response, it is that they may have been doing the acts of an expert longshoreman at the time, but there's more to the picture than that. You need to have testimony of how an expert would have reacted or what?
viewed the condition that they're alleging caused the accident. I'm not answering your question very well. I apologize for that.
You're letting your voice drop.
Sorry. The fact that an accident occurred does not prove that a condition is hazard to an expert experienced longshoreman. There are multiple hazards, and it can be multiple hazards on a vessel that can be dangerous to other people, and it can cause accidents. But that alone does not prove a 905B turnover duty case. You have only a certain, very select group of conditions that can be actionable.
What question, then, was left out in the examination of your witnesses?
I'm not entirely sure.
Well, counsel says they were doing what an expert would do. What else did counsel have to show? What specific answers did he need?
He needed specific answers that said the loose wire would have been dangerous to any expert experienced stevedore, no matter what they were doing, no matter how much care they were taking, and that would have been the required proof, that the loose wire or the lack of a third wire would be dangerous. And especially in the face of the testimony that it was not dangerous or did not pose a risk.
I'm not sure I understand that answer.
Okay.
That is, what? In other words, he should have produced expert testimony that an expert stevedore or longshore worker working in this situation would have done something different?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. What they needed to produce was that the longshore worker or an expert would look at the wire and decide that it was dangerous.
And your voice drops away.
And decide that it was dangerous.
And then stop working.
And then stop working. I think he would have done something different. Would not have worked.
Would not have worked. And actually, that would go then, if they produced that evidence, then the question of reasonableness and unreasonableness and reasonable care would have arisen. And from the perspective of the vessel owner, should they have stopped working, should they have stopped the stevedore from working, or should the stevedore have stopped working?
So an experienced stevedore in that situation would have realized that this was a dangerous condition and would not have lashed down.
Well, if we're talking about the loose wire, or actually even the third wire, the stevedore in this case, Luke Dropperswood, Northland Services, inspected the vessel prior to commencing the operations, modified tightened up the wires in certain locations, inspected it for damage and breakage, and if needed to, could have strung anything it wanted or modified the wire, safety wire, the perimeter wire, as they deemed fit. And so the stevedore, in this case Northland Services, then have the ability then, if they exercise reasonable care, to recognize the hazard, modify the hazard, fix the hazard. Therefore, the vessel owner shouldn't be held responsible for that for a loose wire existed, because the stevedore should have exercised reasonable care and corrected it. Does that make sense?
If I follow you, you're saying it's not negligence if the person who was affected by the bad condition should have seen the problem and done something about it.
Not the individual worker.
What's that?
Not the individual worker. The stevedore and company employer would have had better.
So you're saying now that the real defendant is the services.
That's the longshore defendant, but they're immune from suit under 905B. They've paid their longshore benefits to the extent that they're liable for that, so their liability has been determined. We are talking about...
Well, then, because they may be liable as employer.
They are liable as employer.
They may be as owner and as employer.
If they're liable as employer, if the responsibility for correcting the defect rests with the stevedore, and only rests with the stevedore, then the vessel owner shouldn't be held responsible for it.
Well, I thought we had a case assuring that said you could be both owner and employer and responsible in both capacities.
you can, except that Shearing said adopted the Gravis test for dual capacity employer. So you hypothetically divide the employer into the employer and the vessel owner, and you analyze their obligations based on what the vessel owner would have done versus what the employer's responsibilities were. And so you can have a situation when they're both would be responsible, but you can also have a situation where the vessel owner wouldn't be responsible because the responsibility left stayed with the longshoreman, or sorry, the stevedore. Does that answer your question, or did I lose you?
Well, as much as you can, I guess.
In terms of
Well, so let me just—I don't mean to beat this to death, but I just want to make sure. So your last comment, though, I think it was clarifying to some extent, which was that you look at the stevedore operator, not so much the individual employee.
Correct. Well, to the extent that the stevedore, or to the extent that the longshore employee is not acting in some negligent manner, but that's not the issue in this case. So it's not necessary to decision in this case, but it would be a factor that would go into it in other cases.
Okay.
Finally, the application of the regulation, and I believe this court looked at it, the regulation does give the Coast Guard discretion to modify the rail requirements.
It doesn't give it discretion to do a blanket exemption, does it?
No, but there's no actual indication. No, it gives them... There's no blanket exemption made in this case. Marine Safety Manual says that this rail requirement doesn't apply to unmanned tank barges. But it's not, the Marine Safety Manual isn't the final say on each individual barge's application of safety features. The Coast Guard in charge of marine inspection has to go under the barges and examine it himself and determine whether the railing requirements, because each one does have a specific line for safety equipment, including guardrails.
Is that in the safety inspection here?
I believe so. I believe that. I would have to find it. Let me see why. If you look on page 44 of the record,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully you get the right one. On the back page.
What? Certificate of inspection.
Correct. I'm sorry, I may have.
I didn't see where it had rails.
Now that I've said that, I'm struggling to find it. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Actually, I may have misspoken. It may be in the regulations regarding inspection.
See, I see where it had life-saving equipment, but it doesn't list the rails. It talks about everything else. Ring buoys, immersion suits, portable lifeboat radio, equipped with EPIRB.
It may be in the regulations regarding the scope of inspection, and I would have to look at it in more depth to get the exact citation. And I apologize.
Okay.
So the And I'm sorry, I believe that the regulations state that a COI is not issued unless the Coast Guard Officer of Marine Inspection determines that the vessel complies with all safety regulations. All safety regulations would include the rail requirements as well. So to say that that's the interpretation of the given by the Coast Guard and the Marine Safety Manual and the Certificate of Marine Inspection is plainly erroneous or consistent. statute is beyond or is not clearly shown in the record. The plaintiff has talked about how it wouldn't affect cargo operations, but it doesn't talk about how it would affect vessel operations itself. For example, what a tugboat crew would say about the operation of the vessel and how it would, the rail requirements would affect them in their operations. So that evidence is also lacking in the record. And some, the evidence presented to the trial court did not establish that a condition on the barge was dangerous to an expert in spring stevedore. The testimony was that the barge was safe and that third wire would not be expected. The dropper still testified that the wire may be slack, he didn't consider it unworkable and he didn't consider it a danger. There is evidence of a causation aspect of it, but that is not sufficient evidence to prove that the condition is dangerous to an expert and experienced stevedore. And finally, the regulation itself does not apply. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Start off with, of course, this is a Joseph's claim for dismissal and summary judgment, and consequently all facts must be construed in his favor, and all reasonable inferences in his favor. In regards to who made the report, Ben Burns, as counsel said, drafted the report. He did so after interviewing Luke Donkersloot, Bill Emery, and Joseph Abruska, and this was shortly after the accident. So while Luke Donkersloot and Bill Emery tried to minimize the danger of the slack wire, several years later, in the company of their attorney, at the time, right after the accident, when the defendants themselves concluded that the loose wire was a major contributing factor and a danger, that's what they were relying on the statements from Luke Donkersloot and Bill Emery. Now, and also, I would like to point out that Leonenko also said that that safety wire should be taut and not loose, and that's the defendant's own expert. And indeed, that seems such a basic assumption or basic principle that it cannot be really controverted. And in prior cases in this court, in which they address an issue of expert and experienced longshoremen, I give the example of the Bjarnson case where the longshoreman chose to climb up and over a railing and up and over a deck hatch and then climb down a pitch black, a short ladder. And the court said, well, yeah, in that case, you weren't acting as an expert in experienced longshoremen. There are many other ways to avoid the hazard, to do your job without being injured, without experiencing that specific hazard. In here, with a loose safety wire and a missing third rail, there was no way for Joseph or any expert or experienced longshoreman to avoid the hazard to do the job. Now, counsel has said that, well, the stevedore should have decided not to stop working, or that if he didn't, then the vessel owner says, well, since you've decided to confront the hazard, anyways, I've got to come in and fix it. But, of course, that's the duty to intervene test. That's a much narrower test to understand it, and that is not the claim Joseph is making. Under the defense's arguments, a vessel would have the ability to give a barge over to a stevedore with almost no safety devices, or in fact with all their safety devices defective, and just say, well, stevedore, you're responsible to go deal with them. We don't have to deal with it because you have the final opportunity to fix them. And that's not the rule under the turnover duty. It's not a defense to the turnover duty that, well, the stevedore had the last opportunity to fix the defective safety equipment, because to have such a rule, that would either abrogate the primary duty under Cyndia, the turnover duty, or say the vessel must turn over a vessel in reasonably safe condition, except for all the safety devices, which I think is an illogical result.
Are all these defendants equally well capitalized, or are some not very able to pay damages?
We attempted to obtain discovery into their ability to pay damages in the context of a Pearson claim. That motion is not, our motion to compel on that issue was denied by the court as moot when he granted the defendant summary judgment on all claims. So we don't have the evidence as to that. I can't tell you right now that I think that they are undercapitalized or that they are capitalized.
Thank you.
If this case were to go to trial, would it be Abruska's burden as part of his affirmative case to produce evidence on the standard of care of an expert longshoreman?
I think that he would have to show that there was a danger to an expert and experienced longshoreman, but to prove that, I don't believe he needs to have expert testimony. He doesn't need to have an expert to come in and say, put a stamp of authority on saying, a loose safety wire should be taut, because that's a danger that applies to everyone, experienced or inexperienced. The only way it wouldn't apply be a danger to an experienced longshoreman is if you presume that an experienced longshoreman is never going to lose his balance. He's never going to need to rely on safety devices.
So if you were to go to trial just on this record, what would you argue to the jury is that shows the evidence of the standard of care by an expert experienced?
Well, I think we have the basic, or the testimony by Leo Nagel that safety wires should be taught, and we have the basic, the defense's own expert report that showed the effect of having a loose safety wire, which is it lets you follow inside the bars, which you shouldn't be able to do. And then we have the jury's common knowledge. I mean, for, like, give you an example, if you have a log in the middle of a road, and you drive with a log, you need to have an expert come and say, yeah, it was dangerous to have a log there.
Well, that's true. That's true. But that's far from the case we have here, as I'm sure you'll admit. If I understand your argument, you're saying you don't need an expert longshoreman to testify in this case.
Just as you didn't need an expert naval architect to testify there should be railings.
No, I'm talking about this case.
In this case, no, I don't believe we need an expert testify.
So what you're saying is that even though the Coast Guard's grand exemption that they don't have to have three wires, you don't need an expert to tell you if there had been three wires, maybe this wouldn't have happened.
Well, because a third wire would have been in the middle wire, and it clearly would not have happened. If there had been a third wire, that would have stopped Joseph from falling over. And that's just based on logic of where he fell over, he fell between the two wires.
I think the logic is wonderful, but what you don't get to is the requirement that it be in the eyes of an expert longshoreman, which our cases have always required.
Correct, because I don't believe that having the missing third wire or having a loose safety wire is not a danger to expert, while it is a danger to everybody else. So I don't see how an longshoreman that's an expert in experience, how that's not a danger to him, because he just is like everybody else.
I understand you don't see that. That's been the argument. But the issue is whether it's required under the law. What you're saying is because it's dangerous to everybody, it must necessarily be dangerous to an experienced longshoreman. That doesn't necessarily follow.
I think that in this case, for certain types of dangers, that's true. For example, in the Bjarnson case, that was a case where it was not a danger to an expert longshoreman, while it was a danger, or might have been a danger to everybody else. In this case, it is a danger to both everybody else and expert longshoremen. And again, we had the testimony from Leo Nagel that it should have been taught. And we have, I think there can be no doubt that a safety device, a defective safety wire, is a danger to everybody, expert or inexperienced. And I just don't believe that we need to have an expert to come in to just put a simple, yeah, a loose safety wire should be taught,
come in and testify that how an expert would not have been considered this a danger and why. We don't need that because no one could testify to that.
Right. And it, I mean,
is that your point?
I think that in this case, what we have, another issue here is we have is the kind of limited evidence to experience. Like, what can an expert come in and say? I mean, we don't have a measurement of how loose the wire was. I mean, Joseph couldn't get it because he was on a medevac to Anchorage because he had a very, very serious injury, and the defense didn't measure it. So all we have is this picture. So we have an expert to come in and say, look at the picture, say, yeah, that's loose. Yeah, that was a danger to expert and experienced
longshoreman. At the time of turnover.
Right, at the time of turnover.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate your argument on this case. Very interesting. Okay, our next case for argument.